Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, on the job site. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ plus community, just like you? So you may not be aware, times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. So tell your workmates, your next-door neighbour, and even your mum to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
You are on Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9. Macca and Tass.
Thank you, Macca. Clearly one of the topical issues in the last couple of weeks has been the way in which we care for our elderly folk, especially in residential aged care facilities. To help us understand that a bit better, we have the Chief Executive of Aged and Community Services Australia, which is, as I understand it, the peak for the community-based aged care sector. Patricia Sparrow, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Did I get all that right?
Yes, you did. We represent the not-for-profit and community-based organisations, whether they provide residential aged care or they might be supporting people living in their home or in some other form of independent living.
Ah, thank you for that. Thank you for clarifying that. So you don't actually represent the private residential aged care sector?
We don't represent private for-profit providers. That's right.
However, a number of charitables, in fact, are technically private, even though they have a charitable status.
Well, most of the ones that we represent, and I think, you know, this has been one of the things the Premier's been talking about, private and public. When he says private, he means everything that's not delivered by state government. So I think that's added to some of the confusion. But our members are the not-for-profit providers.
So help us to understand who ultimately is responsible for the residential aged care sector. This has been there's been a bit of football around this. You know, the Premier and the Prime Minister have been kicking the football around this issue. Just help us to understand, you know, exactly who regulates, who funds, who's responsible and who's accountable.
Yeah, sure. And this is it's at a time when nothing should be being made a political football. We just
exactly.
don't need to work together. So regulation and funding for residential aged care comes from the Commonwealth Government. So we're all funded through the federal government, and they have a regulatory body called the Quality and Safety Commission, which is the one that holds us to account on our standards and should be making sure that all providers are operating in the way that they should be. Where the state government comes in is because of the interface with the health system. So we're not funded in residential aged care to provide healthcare services. We're funded in residential aged care. We do have nurses, obviously, and we're funded to provide support within that setting, clinical support for people, but not that which would be provided in hospital. And one of the things that's always been a bit of an issue between health and aged care, we have to facilitate access to healthcare services. So we don't employ GPs, but we have to facilitate access to GPs. We don't necessarily employ, mental health specialists, but we have to facilitate access to that. What's come into sharp relief, sadly, through COVID is the whole issue about that we often need to be able to send someone to hospital. And that's been part of the problem, and that's where I think the Commonwealth and state are having that argy-bargy at the moment. Now, the state government here says that when there's a case of COVID in a residential aged care facility, they will assess on a case-by-case basis whether or not a person needs to go to hospital. Our position is that the first cases of COVID should automatically go to hospital. But unless the health system agrees, we as aged care providers can't do that. If there's an outbreak in aged care, the public health unit comes in and effectively takes over that component of what's happening in residential aged care. And I don't know if I've made that clearer or made it more confusing now, but that's where the interface is, and that's where some of the difficulties and sticking points have been sitting.
Patricia, it's Macca here. We discovered that in the last 12 months the regulator has inspected 20 facilities in Victoria, 20, out of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. So I call into question whether the regulator is actually regulating, whether they're actually doing the job they are, because if they were, my belief is we wouldn't be in the position that we're in now. Now, predominantly, it has been the for-profit facilities that have had the biggest issues with COVID. Some of the not-for-profit have as well, but...
I have.
Yeah. How have we actually got to this place where aged care, all of a sudden, we're seeing, for those of us that aren't familiar with it, that there's some big gaps there. You know, you talked about who's responsible and admitting to hospital and all that, and that's a great explanation, but where we are isn't where we want to be, is it? It's where we would
No,
actually,
it's not.
It's where we'd like to it's be in not. The future. Can you... How do you think
so
we've
just
got
one
to...
Thing on,
sorry, go on.
Sorry. I was just going to say, on the regulator, every home is supposed to have a visit every year, pretty much, and the visits are now unannounced. There were concerns in the past that, you know, sometimes providers knew that the regulator was coming and people were concerned. It's not something that I saw in our membership, but people were concerned that somehow that meant we prepared. So they did move to all of the visits being unannounced. But, you know, clearly the regulatory role needs to be looked at because we really need firm but fair regulation so that, you know, we're to the extent that providers are doing the wrong things, that's picked out. And we as an industry body and our members, we don't want to be part of a sector where, you know, the wrong thing's being done and not picked up. So that's the first point. The issue about how we got to where we got to, we've had issues for a long time in residential aged care and we've been calling those out for some time and not necessarily getting the action that we want. Fundamentally for me, what we're seeing now is we're not clear about what it is we want aged care, residential aged care to provide.
Tell us what the top three issues are, Patricia, just so that we can, you know, have some clarity around that from your point of view.
Well, for me, it feels crass to talk about it with what's going on, but I have to start with the money. So we are not funded in the way that people might think that we are. But to give you a comparison, and one of the reasons we think people need to go to hospital or to subacute, per bed, per day, if I'm in a subacute service, and a subacute's, you know, often where people go after they've been in hospital for a stay, many older people go there, they'll stay there for a little while and be supported. They're funded at the value of about $1,200 to $1,300 per day. They come to residential aged care, whether they come direct from hospital or they might have had a stay in a subacute ward, they'll come to us where we'll get a maximum of about $300 a day to care for them. I think that that leads into why we have the other issues. We don't have enough staff in aged care. We want to employ more staff so that we can, you know, make sure that people are getting more attention and more support. But if you compare $1,300 a day to $300 a day, it probably explains why we have less staff than some other settings have. You know, it to me, that's the fundamental underpinning for the things that we have. Some of the issues with our staffing are we have more staff working casual, and we use personal care workers who actually do an amazing job and are an important part of the system. But you know, it means that we have more of that level of staff than say nursing. So you know, that funding underlies the problems that we have with the type of staff and the number of staff that we can employ. And, you know, I think that's a big issue. And the other thing we must do in residential aged care, and providers are doing this, they're looking at different models. Some of them are now implementing what's called the household model, which is where rather than having a large institutional setting where you might have, you know, 50 people sharing a joint space sort of ward-style settings. Many of them now have still large facilities, but within them they have what's called households, where it might be 10 to 12 people living in a household. The same staff are assigned to those people, and it does become much more home-like. And then in the broader facility, they've got access to coffee shops and hairdressers and, you know, all of that. The other thing that we don't do well enough, partly because of the regulatory and financial settings, but just partly because I think we're still on a process of learning how best to support, is we need to take a wellness approach for people. So there's much more of an effort now about keeping people as independent as possible rather than focusing on just supporting them on the areas that they've got problems with. So you'll see much more effort now in many facilities around you know, wellness, gyms, lifestyle, that kind of thing, which is really important. And those are the things that we need to encourage, and we need to have the support behind us to deliver that, to make sure that it's a really good experience for older people when they do need to come in. And many people, when they come into residential aged care, have dementia. And we're looking and finding new dementia models that support people. And one of our members opened a terrific dementia village down in Tasmania, Koronji, where it's, you know, there's a whole lot of facilities on site, and people are actually able to wander around that whole site without the concern that they're going to somehow come to harm because they've got dementia and not be able to find their way home.
Patricia,
so I think there's lots of... Sorry.
I was just going to say, we've actually just had a lot of feedback as you've been speaking. But one of our listeners, we don't know their name, but their number is 104, said that from their understanding, clearly this person works in the sector, says that the average daily rate is about $159 per day. And then they say you have to feed, you have to nurse, you have to power, you have to clean, you have to garden, you've got to pay your rates, your building expenses.
How can you do
out of $159 per day?
That's right. And, you know, I was being kind. I quoted at the top end of the funding that we would get. So that person does work in aged care and knows it well. And I think this is the question. And, you know, as I said, sometimes talking about money is crass, and people think providers talking about money is because we're just after more money. But the fact is, what really concerns, you know, our members is how do we do all of that and provide the quality of care that we want to provide and that, you know, everybody is expecting. And that's why I find that comparison between, you know, subacute gets funded at $1,300 a day, but ours is very much less than that. And any person who manages a budget will actually go, well, yes, of course I can buy a whole lot more and do a whole lot of other things if I've got $1,300 a day than if I've got, well, $159 or $300.
Yeah. So to encapsulate, Patricia, there does need to be more money. There needs to be more staffing, and, you know, which you've already touched on. And I would say,
well, I think you've also talked about increasing sort of regulations, especially
getting
around
to that,
standards.
That, you know, that the regulator. I say the regulator hasn't just been asleep at the wheel; they've had the windows blacked out. 20 inspections in Victoria last year in the last 12 months. Come on.
And that surprises me. That surprises me to hear that. But I think what we need to do is make sure that the regulation that we do have gets to the nub of the problem.
Yeah.
So we need to sort of look at how we how we regulate. We think there are other things we can do, and we think a lot of it should be focused on what's the resident experience, and they obviously also regulate home care. It is about listening to the older person and what their experience is, and finding out what they value, and making sure that we're doing more of that. But, you know, there is no doubt we've got the Royal Commission, which we shouldn't overlook, the Royal Commission, which we've welcomed and we're supporting, because actually those of us in the sector, we want reform. We've been saying for years, you know, there's lots of things that need to change, and we want more money to be able to have more staff, to be able to do those things that we think are really important. And that's why the Royal Commission, we are hoping, is going to give us the best chance of getting those changes that will make it better for everybody. But in the meantime, you know, yesterday was Aged Care Employees Day. You know, the people that I work with, the providers and the staff, they stay in even though there's all these problems in the system because they care about older people and they want to give good services. So
thank you very much, Patricia. Yeah, no. Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but this is clearly a topic that we need to delve into a bit more deeply. So we'd love to have you back again at some point, just to sort of unpack some of the issues a bit more, and maybe even bring in some case studies as well to sort of really.
I'd love to come back, and thank you for talking about it. It's a really important issue. We all need to get behind as a community.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for the
older Australians,
and thank you for the advocacy work that you're doing as well. It's important that we actually continue to shine the light on these issues, especially as we are, in fact, an ageing population as well.
Aren't we, Tess?
Yes, we are. Thank you very much, Patricia.
Thank you for your time.
Tess, I just want to read out this comment from a listener. I'm not going to name...
Not Janice.
I wasn't going to name the listener.
Well, they've actually named themselves.
Yeah,
so
but I'm
okay.
Not going to use the surname.
No, that's fine. Janice, 142.
Yep. And Janet says, as a registered nurse working across aged care and disability sector... Here are my comments. Any audits conducted are related to the documented evidence related to the standards, not viewing the actual hands-on practice. Both support staff work across sectors in disability houses or community. There is no registered nurse overseeing safe practice in disability. Registered nurse role is to write up care plans and instruct support staff, employed as casual as needed. Registered nurses do not need to work directly with support staff to ensure safe practices. Let me just say that again. Registered nurses do not work directly with support staff to ensure safe practices. I've witnessed unsafe practices in both areas in aged care. How can one recognised nurse, one registered nurse, monitor safe practices for 90 patients and staff and take on that level of duty of care? We agree, Janet, and we talked about this last week. And Janet says, thank you for allowing me to express my experience and concern. It's not new. I've been nursing for many years, and auditing was supposed to monitor a deregulated industry. Well, it hasn't, because the regulator carried out 20 inspections, and we're going to find out whether they're inspections or accreditations in Victoria in the last year. The regulator is not just asleep at the wheel. They have the windows blacked out.
Janet, perhaps if you're interested, you might like to actually join us on air and talk to us about what it's like.
We'd love to hear.
To work on the ground caring for elderly people in one of these residential aged care facilities. I always love a personal reflection and a personal story.
You'd be very welcome.
It just makes it very human. Just shoot us back an email again, or perhaps we might contact you later.
Saturday Magazine is proudly sponsored by Velocity Rewards, the loyalty program of Virgin Australia.